Hi, my name is Sam Williams, and welcome to part one of episode number 186 of my 60 Music Podcast, the Millennial Throwback Machine. So first of all, I'd like to welcome all you to part one of episode number 186 of my 60 Music Podcast, the Millennial Throwback Machine. I am Sam Williams, and for those of you who are just now discovering this podcast, either on the Apple Podcast app, or on Stitcher, or on Google Podcasts, or on Spotify, and you're wondering, so what the heck is this? I'm going to give you a brief description of what the show is all about. Okay, so I'm Sam Williams, and I'm a 26-year-old songwriter slash producer. But I'm also a 60 music fan slash expert slash nerd, and each week with this podcast, I take one song by one artist in the 60s and put the show in two parts. First part of the show, talk about my opinion of the song and why I think it's so good, or why I think it sucks, and then to my own personal analysis on the range of the song, which will include the chords, below and lyrics. And the second part of the show, I dig deep into the history behind that track. In that part of the show, I talk about who wrote the song, who produced it, history behind the studio musicians that played on the song, the songwriters that wrote the song, the producer that produced it, the studio the song was recorded at, and the label the song was released on, and the peak position the song made up originally on the Billboard Hot 100 charts when it first came out, and the history behind the artist that recorded the song, and the year and month the song was released. All that is in the second part of the show! Now, before we move on with this week's episode of the podcast, is that I don't know if you guys could tell by the opening of this episode, but normally I feel very chipper at the beginning of these episodes, because normally I'm really excited, I'm very happy, things are great. And the thing is that I hate to start this episode out with a downer, but I really need to address this to you guys because this is very important. And that is, this is the very first episode I'm putting out on my podcast on my new hosting platform, which is Anchor. And I want to say this right now before I dive into this week's episode and get into my usual weekly shenanigans with breaking down the 60 song and analyzing and talking about it, and the next week talking about the history behind it. I just want to say that if you still listen to my podcast, meaning if you're listening to it right now and you've been listening to it since I've been releasing episodes this entire time, meaning you'd never stopped listening to the show, meaning even though my show is now an Anchor, you're still listening to it on whatever podcast platform you're listening to it on, regardless if it's Apple or Spotify or Stitcher or iHeartRadio, whatever. If you're still listening to this podcast, I want to just thank you from the bottom of my heart for still listening to the show, because this move I thought was going to be really, really good, and it was exciting because it came up where I thought I'd have to pay for my podcast again, but turns out I don't have to pay for it anymore because Anchor is a free hosting podcast service. Which is really, really cool, and it saved up money that I could use for something else now, which is really cool, and, you know, which is great, but it also, this move has also been kind of traumatic for me. It wasn't all sunshine and rainbows for me, and I'll explain to you why right now. So when I made this move, I initially thought that, okay, my Hooshka will allow me to save my listener data. And I was really wrong to assume this, but at the same time, I wish this was true, but it's not. But at the time, I was thinking, okay, cool. I can, you know, save some money, and I can save my listener data and, you know, move on to my next host and, you know, not lose anything. Because the whole time I was thinking, oh, I can just save my podcast listener data and, you know, I can send it to my new host and they can just update the numbers and I won't have to start from scratch. Well, I was dead wrong about that. So what I didn't know was that by making this move and basically deleting my account with Hooshka and starting with Anchor. By making this move, I basically, the best I can do was the equivalent of, before deleting an Instagram account, take a screenshot of how many followers I had and how many people I was following back, and then just saving it onto my phone and then just deleting that account, starting all over. And that's basically the equivalent of what happened to me, because I thought I wouldn't have to do that. I thought I could save my listener data and I could just start from where I was before. But I unfortunately realized that that was not something that could have been done, because when I made this move, what happened was that I had to start all the way from zero for my podcast. I mean, not from zero, but just I couldn't begin my new hosting journey with Anchor at 30,000 listeners in total for my podcast. I tried to make this move once before, but I canceled it when I found out I would lose all my listener data and just went back to Hooshka. But now I had to move from Hooshka because they were going out of business. So I had to move hosting services, which I thought, okay, at first I thought, okay, no problem, that's fine. But I didn't know it would be this bad. I didn't think that I would lose all my listener data. I didn't think I would have to start all over again with Anchor. But that is the unfortunate truth about it. I looked at my listener data the other day. I have like 500 something listens in total. And before I was getting 100 listens a week, and I had 30,000 listens in total. I mean, it's just hard for me to put into words how really frustrating this is and how sad I feel about this. I just wish this wasn't true. But I just want to say that if you guys still listen to my podcast, thank you so much for doing that, because every time you listen to the show, it will help me get back to where I was before. Now, I know it's going to take years for me to get back to 30,000 listens in total. It's going to take a long time for me to get there. I can't even imagine how long it's going to take for me to get back to 30,000 listens in total. It's going to take years. And now, the other thing is that I have a record of those 30,000 listens in total. It's not like I don't. It's saved on my computer. But it just sucks that I'm not there anymore, and I have to start from the bottom and build my way back up now. It's really, really sad, but I mean, eventually, if you guys keep listening to this podcast, I'll get back to 30,000 listens in total, and I think the cool part about Anchor is that I don't think I need to have X amount of listeners. I don't think I need to hit a certain amount of listeners to make money. So, I haven't really fully dived into Anchor yet. I mean, this is literally the first episode I'm releasing with Anchor. So, you know, I'm still figuring out what their hosting service is like. But again, you know, if you guys still listen to my podcast, thank you. Because even though I moved to Anchor, you should still be able to find my podcast in all the places that it's on. And it should still be there. Nothing should change about that. So if you guys still listen to my podcast on whatever platform it's on, thank you. I really appreciate it. So yeah, I mean, I hate to start this episode out with a bummer, but that's just, unfortunately, it is what it is. But on the positive side, I'm making progress with my upcoming EP. I have two masters now. You know, I'm still waiting on the instrumental. I have two instrumental mixes. I'm still waiting on the rest of them, and I'm still waiting on the rest of the masters. I have all the final mixes, and I'm waiting on the final versions of the artwork too, because I got a sneak peek of the artwork, you know, some rough versions of them, but now I'm waiting on the final versions of them. So that's really exciting. You know, that's positive. That's some forward moving motion in there. And I know you guys are probably thinking, Sam, when are you going to release these songs? Well, I really want to develop a marketing plan of attack for these songs before I release them. Cause I don't just want to release them because anybody can do that, and I want these songs to be successful. So I really want a marketing plan of attack to go into these songs, and I'm developing that right now. So, you know, it's, things are in motion. So you guys will get to hear these songs soon enough. But if you guys want to hear a couple of these songs before they're out, or at least one of them, please subscribe to the premium subscription version of this podcast. Please go do that. And by the way, there's nothing changed about that, because that's on a completely different host, because it's a private feed, it's not a public feed. So please go do that. I really, really appreciate it. And there's two more interviews coming out with that soon. There's an interview with Don Daneman, part two of that, the guy who was in the Circle. You know, the Circle was managed by Brian Epstein, who managed the Beatles. And another guy who I'm going to talk to pretty soon is pretty interesting. He's someone who from an area of 60s music that I've never even spoken to anybody like this at all. And this should be an interesting interview, because I've spoken to guys from LA. I've spoken to a couple people from Detroit. I've spoken to mostly East Coast people, like New York, a lot of New York people I've talked to. But I have never spoken to anybody who remotely worked or did anything in Memphis. And he's going to be my very first Memphis interview I'm going to do, because this guy was a recording engineer for Stax Records. And I cannot wait to interview him, because I'm sure I'll learn a lot, because, I mean, I do know about Stax Records. I've covered them on my podcast once before. But I feel like I might have a lot more to learn about them. You know, there might be some more things I don't know about what went on behind the scenes during those recording sessions. It's going to be a great interview, because, you know, the cool thing about him is that he was a white guy for a recording engineer. He was a white guy who was a recording engineer for a record label that was based in the Deep South back in the 60s. So think about that for a minute. I mean, he was a recording engineer for a record company that was based in the South in the 60s that was doing rhythm and blues soul music. And he was a white guy. And he was having interactions with black people. This wasn't legal in that city back in the South back in the 60s. Black people and white people could not be in the same room at the same time together legally. I mean, in the 60s. That just, you couldn't do that. There were rules in place for black people and white people being together. I mean, that was at a time when, you know, the government was saying, we can't do that. Everything has to be separate. So I think it would be interesting to kind of hear how they got away with that and what they did to circumvent those rules, because we all know how incredibly wrong those rules are, were, and how bad they are right now. You know, I mean, there's been a lot of change to get rid of that. And, you know, we don't live in that kind of society anymore, but there's still some things happening that kind of stem from that. But I think it would be interesting to talk to him and talk about what was it like to work for that record company, and what were the sessions like, what were the musicians like, what were the producers like, I mean, just, you know. Also, I think it'd be interesting to talk up with him about what was it like to work for such a soulful record label, but what was it like to work for a label that just had a really tough time competing with the major R&B pop crossover labels like Motown. I mean, I think that would just be an amazing interview, and I'm very excited to get to talk to him. So I'll keep you guys posted when the interview is out. But yeah, I mean, I have mostly exciting stuff happening with me, but this is just a huge bummer with my podcast. And again, if you're still listening, you know, if you were listening to me when I was on Hooshka, and you're still listening to me right now while I'm on Anchor, thank you so much. Really, really appreciate it. So let's get started in this week's show. Moving on, let's get started in this week's song, shall we? Okay, so I'm about to do something very, very different on my podcast that I've never done before, ever. I've never, ever done anything like this before on my podcast. And it's one of those things where it's like, I've never done a song like this before, ever. And I thought to myself, okay, well, I've covered LA on my show a bunch of different times. I've done a bunch of different LA songs on my podcast, but I've never done anything like this before. But this song very much represents the sounds of Southern California. I mean, when you listen to the song, you cannot imagine any you can't picture anywhere else in the world other than sunny Southern California. You cannot, this is such an LA song, it's not even funny. You know, and sometimes, you know, some songs that came out of LA, you think to yourself, how would I know this was recorded in LA? This could have been cut in New York. Well, the thing is about this song is that the atmosphere of the lyrics in the song is very LA, because, you know, LA in the 60s was a place where it was hot rod central. People had, you know, very fancy cars. They drove really, really cool fancy cars. And races were not necessarily, you know, monitored like they are now. I mean, if you live in LA and you drive, you're not gonna see people racing, because nowadays, you know, people, you know, the races are heavily monitored by the authorities in Los Angeles, and they just, you never see them because, you know, LA is just too inhabited now. There's too many people that live out here. So, you know, it's so easy. If a race were to happen in, like, I don't know, Sunset Boulevard, people would know about it. And then, you know, the cops would get called and the thing would get shut down immediately. But back then, LA wasn't necessarily as hugely inhabited as it is now. There were less people that lived in LA back then than there are people that live in LA now. So people could get away with, you know, drag races and stuff like that because there were less cars in the street. It was less congested. It wasn't like New York. LA, you know, I mean, heck, like in the 60s, the San Fernando Valley where I grew up, you know, was still mostly orchards and farms. I mean, it wasn't really residential. There weren't a whole lot of houses. It was a whole lot of land, you know. So, that's kind of where we were at back in the 60s. So LA was a lot less inhabited back then than how it is now. So you can get away with songs like what's going on in the lyrics of the song. But other than that, it's a fun song. I mean, this song is an absolute blast. It's also one of those songs that you just, whenever you want to hear it, you just want to turn it up. It's just a really, really cool, fun song that is just, it's a blast. I don't know how else to describe it. It's just really, really fun. It's upbeat. It's catchy. You know, it just makes you want to get up and dance. You know, it's a hard song to play because there's a lot going on musically. I mean, this is not a simple song to play on guitar or piano. I mean, there's some repetition going on here, but it's also really, the song stretches out musically. It's a beefy song when it comes to chord progression. So there's a lot. There's a lot to talk about, not only with the music, but also with the lyrics, because this is going to be an interesting song for me to break down lyrically, and this is definitely going to be something that it might be tough for me to explain, but I'm going to do my best, and maybe you'll get it, maybe you won't, depending on if you drive or not, but I'll save that for later. But I'm just going to get right into it. This is a super fun song. Can't wait to dive into it. Okay, so this song came out in October 1963. It's by a group called the Ripcords. The name of the song is called Hey Little Cobra. Hey little cobra, don't you know you're gonna shut them down? Wow. This is a fun song, isn't it? Man, it really kicks butt. It is just it. There's a lot packed in here for a really short song. I mean, there's a lot going on here musically, you know, and it's fun too. It's super upbeat, super catchy, and just, man, this is just one hell of a record. And I'm going to talk about what makes the song so good, both musically and lyrically. But first, let's get into the song's music. Okay, so really, there's not really much going on here in terms of the arrangement. It's a simple arrangement. The musicians are not doing anything crazy here. They're just playing the chords of the song. The guitar players are just playing the chords of the song. Any piano players in the song are just playing literally the chord charts that are probably right in front of them. Now, the drummer is actually really the highlight of this song, because the drummer is the most driving force behind this record. It, you know, he is just so hard-hitting with his fills. I mean, they are just so, like, man, they're just like, the drummer packs so much of a punch on this record, and the way he just drives the train of the song, you know, from beginning, middle to end. I mean, the song opens up with just drums, and then everything comes in shortly after that. And then there are moments where it's just drums and that's it. Particularly when the hook is sung. Every time the hook is sung, everything drops out except for the drums. And then you just hear the vocals and the drums take over. And that's the other thing I wanted to say about this song. I've talked about this before, about songs where there's a lot of heavy emphasis on the vocals. But most of the time when you hear songs like this, you're not going to hear any crazy instrumentation, except for maybe the drums. The drums are the only things that are going to really stick out on records like this. That's because the musicians know that, hey, you know what? This record's all about the singing. The vocals are the stars of the show. So we need to back off and just play the chords of the song and then just let the vocals take over. And that's exactly what they did. Just like how when I talked about Runaround 2 by Dion, the vocals literally took over. And that's what that was the most important. This is a vocal-driven song. So there doesn't need to be a whole lot of crazy instrumentation going on. There's no need for any solos or like counter melodies played by any instruments or anything crazy happening. It's just a simple song with simple chord changes being played by the musicians. Or actually not simple chord changes, because I must say that the song does not have very simple chord progression at all. It sounds simple, but there are some extra things thrown in there that make it not so simple. And I'm actually, but that's basically just the arrangement. There's nothing crazy going on as far as the musicians doing any sort of weird things underneath the vocals. It's just, they're just playing the chords of the song. The arrangers probably wrote down exactly what the chords were, and they just looked at what they saw and just played what they saw. You know, I mean, that's basically what they're doing in the song. The drummer is really the driving force behind this record. I mean, because he's playing some really crazy fills on the song, specifically with the snare. The rim shots he plays in the snare is really, really cool. You know, I mean, he's playing some really, really cool fills. I mean, he's hitting the crash a lot too, especially in the chorus. In the chorus, the crash is being hit a lot. You know, so the snare crash fills in the chorus are really emphasized in this record. But actually, let's talk about the chord progression for a minute, because even though the song may sound like it has a simple chord progression, there's one thing that the song has that makes it not so simple. And I'm going to talk about that actually with you right now. So for the most part, you know, it's a simple 1-4-5. I mean, that's kind of the chords that are being used. But it's kind of almost like a 12-bar blues song. You can almost call this a 12-bar blues song. But there's one chord that makes it different. There's one chord that makes it stand out. And that chord is basically, you know, in the song switches keys. It starts out in B flat, and then it goes to B. When the song starts out in B flat, you hear that D flat major chord. And if you're wondering what that is, it's basically a flat 2. That's essentially what it is. It's a flat second chord. And I've talked about this before in my podcast, but that is a classic, it's a move. A lot of classic rock songs do that, but they flat the two and they flat the three, and they create this parallel major, parallel minor experience. And when you do that in a song, it makes it just sound so unique and so different. When you use a flat two or a flat three, it just really makes it sound unique. Because it's funny, this chord progression kind of loops itself, because it starts out with the chorus, the hook, and then it goes into the first verse, and then you hear the chorus again. And when you hear the chorus, it almost sounds like a 12-bar blues song. You can almost picture the 12-bar blues turnaround happening at the end, but it's not. Because as soon as you think you're going to hear the 12-bar blues thing happening, you hear that flat two, and then you hear the 4-5. And then you're like, holy shit, that was different. That was really, really different. Because it's wow. That was unique. And when you hear that that flat two, because basically what it is that in B flat it's C sharp or D flat. That's basically what it is. That's a flat two. A flat three would be E flat. But in this case, it's a flat two. So basically it would be like in the key of B flat, essentially you got the flat two, but then it goes to the 4-5, and that's kind of cool because it kind of sounds kind of minory, except that the 5 is still major, so it sounds kind of majory too, and the 1 is still major too, so it's almost like D flat is the minor third of B flat major. So when you hear that chord in there, or it sounds like a minor three chord in the major key, that's something that it's very very much stands out. And it's the same thing when it changes keys too. You hear the minor three chord in a major key, and that's totally different because you hear D major in there. But the unique thing about this song is that when you hear those chords being heard, they're not being played on an instrument. They're actually being vocalized. You hear that chord. You don't hear it on an instrument. You hear it through voices. You hear like stacked voices basically singing a chord, and that's insane. This is like straight Dion and the Belmonts right here. This is some serious vocal harmony. I can't imagine how many overdubs they must have done, how many layers and layers of vocals they put on this record. I mean, the vocal layering on this song is absolutely insane. It is so crazy. I mean, it's just, you wouldn't expect a song like this to have so much vocal layering, but it has so much vocal layering. I mean, it's funny because you think, man, you know, they did this all in the 4-track tape machine. How do they do so much vocal layering? I mean, this is absolutely insane, but that's just how they did it back then. I mean, they every time they would overdub, they would lose generations of tape. So you got this, when they did all this vocal layering, you got this huge compressed sound by doing that, and it just sounds insane. And you know, and this is, I love, you know, the unique sound of this song, because. You know, and also another cool part about it is at the end where the hook is repeated, but then you hear one singer just go crazy in the falsetto. That's really cool too. Other than that one unique chord, which happens twice. It happens at the end of every verse and it happens at the end of every chorus. You hear that chord, and the first time you hear it with the instruments, and the second time you hear it with just vocals. So it's a very unique chord change. With that three minor chord in the major key version of the minor key, like, you know, you hear that D major and B major when really it's a minor third chord in a major key. You hear that B minor three chord in B major, and hear that B flat minor three chord in B flat major. I mean, that's really unique hearing that in a song like this, because other than that, it's pretty simple. It's just 1-4-5, and then it kind of hangs out at the four a little bit, and then it goes back to that chord I was just talking about, and then it just, you know, back and forth between one and the four, and then it kind of ends in the five, and then, you know, it loops in the 1-5-1. I mean, that's kind of the gist of the song musically, but that one unique chord of it in the song really makes it stand out. And now I'm going to talk about the lyrics of the song, or at least try to attempt to analyze the lyrics of the song. We'll see how this goes. Okay, and one more thing I want to say about the song before I get to the lyrics. This is a high energy record. This is a song you could work out to. This is like a really, really intense, like really, really fast song. Like the song kind of goes at a million miles an hour. It's short, but there's a lot going on here. It's a lot impacted in just a couple minutes. It's a monster of a record for you, and it just starts out strong and it ends strong. It's one of those records, like, it's kind of like you're working out. It's, you start strong in the beginning and you end strong. You go fast, you go hard, and the song goes fast and it goes hard. It goes like a workout. It's just like you're doing intense cardio at the gym. This is kind of that song. This is basically a song that does that. You know, you start strong and you end strong, and that's exactly what the song does. Okay, so now I'm going to try to talk about the lyrics for this song. And here's the thing. This might be a little bit challenging for me, because this is sort of a very specific genre of music from the 60s that I haven't talked about yet. And it might be tough for me to analyze the lyrics for the song, because I can't guarantee you that you'll understand them, because you might be somebody who's never driven a car before, like me. I've never driven a car in my life. I've never gotten my driver's license. I mean, I have my California state ID because I live in L.A. in Southern California. But I've never owned a car before. I've never bothered to get my driver's license. So I don't really quite understand what's happening here lyrically. And to add another layer of it, they're talking about vintage cars. They're talking about cars that you may have never heard before. You know, and it's cars that I basically, even before I record this podcast, I literally had to look up what these cars were. You know, these cars were, I literally had to look up what they were. It just to give you guys sort of an idea for what's going on lyrically for this song. Because there's a lot of language being used in the song that might go clearly over your head, just like kind of like me. Because I grew up listening to this song. It's always been a favorite of mine. But some of what's going on lyrically in the song just might go clear over your head, because you may have never driven a car like this in your life, and you may have no idea what they're talking about. Even the hook of the song, you may not even understand that either. So what I'm going to do when I break down lyrics for the song is I'm going to do my best to try to explain to you what is going on with the song lyrically in the best way I possibly can. And here's how I'm going to do it. Okay. So, first of all, what's a cobra? What do they mean when they say, "Hey, little cobra, don't you know you're going to shut him down?" Well, here's what they're talking about. There was a car back in the 60s called the Chevy Cobra. It was actually a Shelby Cobra. That was the name of the car. And it was created by a guy named Carroll Shelby. He's a legendary person in the car industry, in the automotive industry back in the day. Very, very famous. He created a car called the Shelby Cobra. That's what they're talking about in the song. Now, this is an audio podcast, so I can't pull up a picture of a cobra, but it's spelled just like the snake cobra. Like, you know, it's spelled just like that. So if you want to look it up, please go do that. Want to see a picture of it so that we know I'm talking about? It's fine. That's the first thing. So that's what the car, they're talking about a Shelby Cobra. And by the way, these are all sports cars. These are all very fancy, cars that cost a lot of money back then to drive. And you really had to, you know how to use these cars. And you also, and they were very flashy. They were very high class cars. They were good looking cars. They were like, kind of like the Maseratis, the sort of they were kind of like, how do I explain this? They were almost like the, you know, I don't drive, so it's hard for me to really give you a good picture of this. But there's, you know, nowadays you have the Lamborghinis, you have, you know, really, really fancy cars, the Italian cars, the Lamborghinis, the Maseratis. These were kind of like that, the American equivalent to that. You know, sort of like the, you know, like, again, just the American equivalent to really fancy cars. And there's two other cars that are being mentioned in the song, which are also very fancy sport cars. And they're the Corvette Stingray, the Chevy Corvette Stingray, and the Jaguar XKE. So that's what they're talking about in the song. They're making a reference to those cars. Now, if you're a millennial listening to this podcast, you may have no idea what I'm talking about because you may have never seen these cars in your life. Because the truth is, you're not going to see these cars very often unless you live in a certain place. Because there are, depending on where you live, there are vintage car shows that do happen in certain parts of the country. So you may be able to see these cars if you ever had a vintage car show, depending on how common they are these days. But for the most part, you're likely to never see these cars, because nowadays we live in a modern world, so everyone's driving modern cars, you know, like Nissans or, you know, Priuses or whatever. Like, everyone's driving modern cars. So you're probably not going to see these cars in person, but you might. If you've ever been to a vintage car show, if you're into that. So yeah, those are the three different cars that are being talked about in the song. That's sort of the beginning aspect of me talking about the lyrics of the song. And again, this song might not be very relatable to you, because you may not know how to drive, or you may have never driven a car before. And second of all, you may not have a knowledge of vintage 60s cars. So you may not even know what these cars, what, you know, there's a lot of lyrics in the song that just might go way overhead because you don't know the lingo that they're talking about, and you might not know what kind of cars they're talking about. Well, I thought I did an okay job of explaining the cars. Now I'm going to try to talk about what's going on with the lingo of the song, the lyrics of what they're trying to say in the song. So, one thing I can say about these cars is that they all operated stick shift, and this is something that's a little tough for me to explain myself because I've never driven a car before. But I will say that even though I've never driven a car before, I do have a bike. I have ridden a bicycle before, and I do have a bicycle. And there is a similarity between a bicycle and a car. There are some similarities, even though they're completely different. Still, they do have some commonalities, and one of them is a shift in gears. You know, you can shift gears in a car, and you can shift gears in the bike. The bikes have gears, and so do cars. My bike happens to have 3 gears on the left-hand side and 7 on the right, so it's an 11-speed bike. You know, so it's basically, that's essentially what it is. It has 11 speeds. You know, and cars have speeds too. So, actually 10 speeds, duh, sorry. It's a 10-speed bike. So, cars have speeds, and so do, bikes. And I know that when I ride my bike, if I shift up, it makes me go slower. But if I ship down, it makes me go faster. So I'm assuming the same rules apply with these old school cars. If you shipped up, you go slower. If you ship down, you go faster. So I don't know if this is true because one of the lyrics in the song, he sings, I hung a big shift and I got in a high and I flew by the stingray and raved bye-bye. Now, I'm not sure what he means by hung a big shift. I'm not sure if he's shifting upwards or downwards, because if I ride my bike, if I shift up, I go slower. It's harder for me to pedal, but if I shift down, it's easier for me to pedal and I go faster. So it's hard to tell if he's going up or down, but maybe he is shifting down so that way he can go faster. Or maybe shifting up, you know, or just to go faster. I'm not exactly sure. I've never driven a car before. I don't know the mechanics of these cars, so it's hard for me to really understand what's going on here, but I'm doing my best. So, yeah, I mean, like I said before, what's happening here is there's a drag race. These cars are racing against each other. He's racing against Jaguar XKEs and Chevy Stingrays, Cobra Stingrays. So he's basically racing against Cobra Stingrays and Jaguar XKEs. It's a Corvette Stingray. It's a Corvette Stingray. He's racing against Corvette Stingrays and Jaguar XKEs, and he's got a Shelby Cobra. So that's kind of what's happening here. And he might be driving two cars too, or he might have another car pitched behind him, because he said he took his Cobra down the track and hitched it to the back of his Cadillac, and that is a car. So he might have a Cadillac hitched behind him while he's driving his Cobra. And, you know, he's racing with these other vehicles. And by the way, I just want to say, this is very interesting song for the 60s too, because there's no relationship involved in the song at all. In fact, there's a whole lot of male energy in this song at all. A whole lot of big D energy happening, because this is like all dudes, because you can kind of assume that he's racing against men. So there's no women in this song at all. So this is a pretty dudey song for the 60s. I mean, there's a lot of times when, you know, songs sung by guys, there's a lot of times there's a woman involved. But there's no women involved in the song at all. It's just a dude-on-dude song. You know, dudes racing against dudes, you know, at a time when, you know, you would see drag races all the time. It was a common thing, and, you know, and it was easier to get away with it with those kind of things, completely unlike right now. And now I'm going to try to break down what's going on with the hook of the song, which is, "Hey, little Cobra, don't you know I'm going to shut him down?" If you don't know what he means when he sings, "I'm going to shut him down," in hot rod lingo, that basically means he's going to win the race. Shutting someone down means you're going to win the race. You're going to outbeat whatever cars you're trying to race against. And that's basically what he's saying. Like, he's so confident that this Cobra is going to beat out everybody else, that eventually he's going to shut everybody down and he's going to win. And when he listens to the song, I listen to the plot line of it, because there is kind of a plot line with the song. Even though it's just three verses and three choruses, there is a plot line happening with the verses in the song. You know, and a cool little half-set modulation, too. But really, the plot line that's happening is that he's racing against these cars, and throughout the song, he's winning. He's cruising by the Stingrays and the XKEs. He's racing, and they're way behind him, and he's just beating all of them. He's, like, basically just, like, he's in his car, and he's just, like, literally, like, he's like, screw you, I'm going to beat all you guys. And it's almost kind of a song, you can almost call this, like, they could have used a song in Cobra commercials. Literally, they could have just used this as a walking billboard for the Shelby Cobra. I mean, they literally could have used a song in commercials for the car. It's literally a song that just completely self-promotes the car. You know, it's almost listening to the song was almost like listening to a car commercial from back then, because literally the song glorifies the car and makes it seem like the best car in the world. It's going to beat all the other cars, you know, whatever cars you decide to race against or whatever cars you wind up racing against. This car is going to outbeat all of them, and it's the best car out there. That's kind of the impression that the song gives you about the Shelby Cobra. You know, it literally sounds like a song you would hear at a Shelby Cobra commercial. I mean, they could have used a song as an advertisement for that car. I don't know why the car company that made this car didn't use a song for a commercial that they did for it. I mean, it was definitely a missed opportunity. I mean, kind of too late now, because you know, you're not going to see people driving Cobras these days, you know, or at least the kind of Cobras that they drove back then. Because, you know, I mean, if they still make this car, I guarantee it looks a lot different now than it did back then, you know. So, and, you know, you might not even see this car, you know, depending on if you're able to access a vintage car show wherever you live. But yeah, so again, I'm doing my best to explain the song lyrically, but it's hard because I don't drive, so there's only so much I can do in terms of explaining what the song is about lyrically. But it may or may not be a relatable song for you, because you may not have ever been in Southern California, and you may not have you may never have driven a car like this before. So I did my best. Hope you guys enjoyed that, and it's kind of cool because, you know, the modulation is cool because it tanks from the major one and then it modulates up to the next chord after that, B flat to B, and then kind of does that. That's really cool. And yeah, I mean, that's kind of the gist of this song. Hope you guys enjoyed my analysis for it. Let's wrap this one up. So that concludes part one of episode number 186. On my 60 Music Podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. I'm Sam Williams, and if you listen to this song, and if you're around my age, you've never heard this before, and you're like, wow, this is such a cool song. It kicks butt. It's awesome. I love it. And if you're around my age, or maybe, you know what, maybe you like the Beach Boys, and you kind of know about this music already. You love the Beach Boys, and you're around my age, but you've never heard a song like this before, or you're familiar with the Beach Boys, you've never heard this song before, and you thought, wow, this kind of has a Beach Boys sound, I like it. You know, I like the Beach Boys vibe of this song, and you're around my age, please email me at samltboy@icloud.com. Also, reach out to me if you think you could help me explain the lyrics for the song a little bit more, because you never know. You might hear this and you're like, Sam, I've driven these cars before. I know exactly how they work. I can explain to you a little bit better what's going on with the song lyrically. You know, if you're one of those people and you know more about this than I do and you want to help me out, please email me. Reach out to me at samltwilly@icloud.com. You can also reach out to me on Instagram at iHeartOldies or TikTok at the same username at iHeartOldies. Now, as per usual, things you can check out in the description of this episode of this podcast is my last EP. I hope you guys haven't forgotten about that. Cause I know I haven't promoted on Instagram in a minute. You know, I know people are still listening to it, but I've just been hyping up my upcoming EP. But please go listen to it, cause it's great and it's good on its own. But the next EP will be unbelievable and really, really good. But you want to listen to this one in preparation for the next one, because trust me, you will. Because these songs are good too. The next set of songs are going to be good as well. But these ones that are out right now are good too. So please listen to those and let me know your thoughts on those. Please email me. Let me know you've heard them at samltwilly@icloud.com. You can also reach out to me on Instagram and TikTok at the same username, iHeartOldies. Now, here's the thing about TikTok is that actually, I think you can send me a message, but I can't reply back unless I follow you back. So if you reach out to me on TikTok, please say that you discovered me through this podcast. Say, hey, Sam, this is whoever my name is, whoever your name is. I discovered your podcast, the Millennial Throwback Machine, this platform. So that way I know who you are, because I get a lot of weird followers on TikTok, and half the time their accounts get deleted. So, you know, if you message me telling me who you are and if where you found my podcast, I will follow you back and I'll talk to you. So that's just a tip for if you're following, if you're reaching out to me on TikTok. The same rules don't apply on Instagram, because you can reach out to me on Instagram and you don't have to be following me. But you should still say that, even when you're reaching out to me on Instagram. Yeah, so that way I know who you are, and you're not some, and I know you're not some weirdo. Or catfish. But that's a whole other story. But yeah, so please go do that, and don't forget to also check out the, like I said, last EP, and another thing you want to check out are the two playlists for this podcast, for Spotify and YouTube. You know, definitely, because you'll hear this song plus all the other songs I've talked about my show, for my podcast, and they all live on those two playlists. And if you like those songs, please let me know. Please reach out to me. You can do that by emailing me at samltwilliglaw.com. You can also reach out to me on Instagram at iHeartOldies if you've heard this playlist and you want to suggest me songs to talk about next on my podcast that I haven't yet. Also, definitely check out the two interviews I did last year with Honk Magazine, shout out LA. Hoping to do more interviews soon, but not sure exactly when I'll do them. You can let me know your thoughts on those interviews. You can do that by emailing me at samltwilliglaw.com. You can also reach out to me on Instagram at iHeartOldies or on TikTok at the same username. And also, please check out the premium subscription version of this podcast. I have two more interviews coming out soon. Don Dammer, lead singer of The Circle. I recorded that already, so that part two is good to go. And the interview I did with, I'm going to do another interview with Terry Manning, the Stax recording engineer. That's what his name is, by the way. His name's Terry Manning. So I'm going to interview him. Super cool. Can't wait to do that. That hasn't happened yet, but that will come out some point. So definitely don't want to miss out on the interview. And, you know, I'm still doing the offer where I'm going to give you guys a sneak preview of my next EP if you subscribe to the premium subscription version of this podcast, in which you can find that link in the description of this episode of this podcast. So I'm still doing that. Now, once I get the final artwork and I get the release dates going for these songs, once I get all the masters back and the final artwork, then I might pause that, because then we have some things are in motion to release these songs. So I might not do that anymore. We'll see. But you still have time to subscribe to the premium subscription for this podcast and hear a sneak preview EP before it's out, because those decisions have not been made yet. But they will be, but I must warn you, they will be made very, very soon, because I will get all the masters back for the EP and the final artwork very, very soon, and decisions will be made for release dates. It's going to happen, but not right at the second. So you're definitely going to want to jump on this while you still can. Yeah, so please go do that, and because you don't want to miss out on those two upcoming interviews, plus all the other ones I've done before as well. I know I've been trying to get Brooks Arthur on my podcast, but he's not feeling well, so hopefully I can still do it. You know, so that's kind of where I'm at right now with that. But yeah, so please go check that out. And also the Red Bull merch store for this podcast, please go check that out. Love if you can check out the logo that I have for this podcast. It's really, really cool. I think it really matches it very well. And you should definitely let me know your thoughts on the price of each item in the store. I can adjust them, because I know prices are still kind of high right now for a lot of things, because, you know, inflation's still kind of high. So I can probably adjust them if they're too expensive for you. But if you want to, support my podcast, please go buy a merch item. I'd really appreciate it. You know, if that's one way you can support my show. Other than subscribing to the premium subscription version of this podcast, another way you can support my show is buying a t-shirt or something from my store. The link to that is in the description of this episode of this podcast. And you can also support my music too by checking out my last music video, Keeper in My Back Pocket. Now, here's the thing. So, I've got the final mix for the song Turquoise Apricot, the re-recorded version. So the music video is going to get worked on more soon. If it's already not getting worked on right now. So you will see the next music video relatively soon, but I just really wanted to wait until I get this re-recording of Turquoise Apricot finished, and I did it, and I had the final version of it. I'm just waiting for the master, so it's going to get worked on. You will see it. So, but for now, just check out my last music video for Keeper in My Back Pocket. Link to that in the description of this episode of this podcast. Please go check it out. It's such a great music video. I need to watch it again because it's so good. I mean, the song is great and the music video is cool. I haven't seen the music video in a long time, to be honest with you. Because, when it comes to my art, I try not to look back. I sometimes listen to my old music, but I try to move forward. I don't try to move backwards. But it's always fun to hear my previously released music and watch my previous released music video, because it takes me to a memory of where I was when I wrote the songs, or it brings back memories of where I was when I shot the music video. So it does bring back a lot of pleasant, good memories for the most part. Sometimes those memories aren't always great, because sometimes the songs aren't always about happy things, but I'm sure you guys get the idea if you're artists yourselves. But yeah, I mean, listening to things you've done before does bring back memories for you, just an FYI. Even if you're not an artist yourself, that's a common thing that happens to a lot of artists when they create something and you kind of look back at it. It does bring back memories of when you wrote the song and when you recorded it, and just, you know, that's any artist who creates art, you know, looking at their past art always kind of brings back memories for them, you know. So yeah, that's regardless if you're an actor or, you know, or if you're anything in arts and entertainment, that's kind of how it is. Looking back at something brings back memories for you, something you did in the past. But yeah, so sometimes those memories are good, sometimes they're bad, depending on, you know, what happened. So, but yeah, so again, I'm Sam Williams. And again, I just want to say, if you still listen to my podcast, if you're still listening to it right now, if you when you're listening to it through Hooshka and you still listen to it while it's on Anchor, I really, really appreciate you. Again, it should look the same on everything. Nothing should change. You know, you should still be able to hear my podcast on the platforms it's on. You know, there might be some things I need to update, but everything should still look the same. So if you're still listening to my podcast, thank you. I appreciate it. Hopefully one day I'll get back to where I was, but it's going to take a long time. But I think it's good to know that I might not have to have a certain amount of listeners per episode to make money on my podcast or Anchor, but I'm still looking into that, and I'm not exactly sure how to do that just yet, but I'll find that out soon. But yeah, so I'm Sam Williams, and thank you guys for joining me for this week's episode of my podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. Until next week, please keep things real.